The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Brett Oldenburg. Unfortunately, Nathan Gladwell could not be with us this week, but he'll be back hopefully next week to discuss some college sports. Well, great. Let's get into the big thing that happened this weekend, the college football playoff. That happened. Wasn't great. A great watch, but the games did occur. You had number 7 Notre Dame beat number 10 Indiana 27-17 in the Friday game. Then on Saturday, Penn State number 6 beat number 11 SMU 38-10. Number 5 Texas beat number 12 Clemson 38-24. And in the big nightcap game that was expected to be the most competitive of the first round matchups, number 8 Ohio State beats number 9 Tennessee 42-17. So not many close games there. Greg, what were your thoughts on these first-round matchups that everybody was anticipating in the first year of the 12-team playoff?
Yeah, we talked a few podcasts ago when we were talking about the when the playoff came out, when they decided on the field, and we were talking about how dysfunctional some of the seeding was and how we didn't like most of the matchups. And we did like the Tennessee-Ohio State matchup, but some of the others just weren't very eye-popping. Not a game you would really normally tune in to go see during a primetime game on a regular fall Saturday. And that's kind of what it turned out to be, is four blowouts and four not very fun games to witness. I mean, I know Clemson made it a little close late at Texas with a little push, but that game was not close for most of the game. And then the others were just, I mean, what in the world? But I also think the biggest thing we could take away is I knew when they announced that there was going to be home playoff games that would be such an advantage, especially for teams in the North in December, of the weather aspect of that. And then just having these unbelievable college atmospheres in a playoff type of game. That was something I was really excited about. And we see how impactful it really was, because all four of the home teams won, and won convincingly. And I know some of those matchups weren't quite what we were talking, you know, we were wanting to see, or what we could have seen, but nonetheless, it was still four straight blowouts by the four home teams. So I think that's the biggest takeaway for me, is how impactful and important it was for those home games. Now, there's also an argument to be made that why didn't Oregon get that advantage to have a home game? Why didn't Georgia get the advantage to have a home game? They're the ones that won the two best conferences. But, you know, if you want to go talk, listen to us rant about that, go back to a few podcasts ago. We had a 40-minute rant about that. But it was four blowouts, not competitive games, not fun football. I think that's what a lot of people were expecting. I know people weren't expecting Ohio State to blow out Tennessee in the fashion that they did, but the other three, I think that's about what we were getting ready to watch, and that's what just happened.
I mean, all these games were really hard to watch. I turned most of them off at halftime. I mean, Tennessee, I turned off at the end of the first quarter because I was like, this offense for Tennessee has zero life. Dylan Sampson's out with an injury. Nico is running for his life, and when he does have an open receiver, he can't get it to him. I mean, none of these games were even close to being watchable outside of the Clemson-Texas game. But knowing that game, it was really close. It was really Texas' game throughout. While it was close, Texas really had the handle on that. But, Gray, how can the committee, or just college football in general, move forward and fix the issue of what we saw and not have blowouts in every single first-round matchup?
Man, I tell you, the first thing is you get rid of the transfer portal, but that's a completely different conversation. You see the type of talent to the top end and where the money goes all of a sudden with NIL, with the transfer portal, where there not being any punishment of transferring, and you can transfer as many times as you want. That's what's becoming the problem. And the talent gap is huge. And the talent gap between the Big Ten and the SEC and everybody else was massive this year. Massive, especially at the top end. When you talk about teams like the Ohio State and the Oregons and the Penn States, and then the Georgias and the Texases, and, you know, that there's not any, there's no reason why their playoff matchup should be an SMU or a Clemson or an Arizona State or a Boise State or an Indiana or somebody like that, because and you've got to determine, and we talked about this in the last podcast, and we're just repeating the same thing over and over again. You've got to stick with your word. Either you want to put in the most deserving teams or the best teams. Last year, you put in the best teams, and you got really good matchups. That Alabama-Michigan matchup would have been a much better matchup than in a Michigan versus Florida State matchup, even though that was probably the more deserving game. So that's what you got. But this year, you kind of flipped it, even though it's a completely different format. You completely flipped it, and you wanted the most deserving teams to get in, and you got four blowouts. I know it's completely different, but we've got to stick to one side. I don't like the format at all. Just like I mentioned, how important the home games were. Why do you punish Oregon for this? They don't get a home game, and now they get a red hot Ohio State team. That it's already hard to beat a team twice in a year. They're gonna have to do it. What kind of reward is that? Meanwhile, Georgia gets to go play Boise, or Georgia gets to go play Notre Dame. And Penn State is to go play Boise State. I don't understand that. And Texas, who lost the SEC championship game and lost two times to Georgia this year, it's Arizona State. That Texas is going to kill Arizona State. Those are not on the same playing field. Arizona State deserved to be in the playoffs. They won their conference. They were incredible this year. But they're not on the same level as Texas, and that's going to be a blowout. And we're going to be sitting here, you know, next week or in a few weeks and be like, well, you know, saw that coming. And here we go again. So that's the problem. I think it, my point of view, and I think we talked about this in a few podcasts ago, my point of view would be completely scrap this, go to it either an 18 playoff or a 16 team playoff. Like the higher seed, just one play 16, two play 15. It's really not that hard. Just look at what March Madness is doing. It's really not that hard. And let the home games be for the higher seeds. That 8-9 matchup will be super, super fun. We're going to get some fun matchups, some fun non-conference or some out-of-conference matchups that you don't normally see. And if you looked at the seeding when the College Football Playoff Committee released the field for this year, and if you would have done that, some of the matchups would have been incredible. It would have been so much fun to watch in a game that you would tune into on a regular fall Saturday in primetime. And some great atmospheres, more home games. That's more money for you, College Football Playoff Committee and ESPN. Why not do that? That's a better idea. I think that's also a better way to get a champion. The best sports playoff in all of sports, college, high school, pro, every single sport you could think of is March Madness. Why don't people follow them and do what they're doing? I'm not saying put in a 68-team college football. We'd be doing this until March Madness. We'd be playing those games until March. But what I am saying is follow their strategy. Best teams play, the highest seed teams play the lowest seed teams, and on and on. You could play at neutral site. I like the idea of having home games. That gives an advantage to being a higher seed. And you do that. It's really not that hard. And then you will get some blowouts. We've seen blowouts in college football playoff, even in the four-team playoff. You remember that Michigan State, Alabama, Washington that one year. They put in Cincinnati to go play that unbelievable Alabama. We've seen these blowouts. But why do we continue seeing them over and over and over again after a new playoff format? Well, it's because you messed it up even more. And you try to make it more complicated with automatic bids and the home games for the 5 through 8 seeds. It was just weird. Scrap all that and go back and do what the other college sport is doing and having unbelievable success with.
I just don't think there's a way you can expand the playoff now, looking at what happened in this just 4-game period. I mean, not a close game. None of them were really watchable outside of Texas and Clemson. you can't tell me that you're going to be able to expand to 16 teams and get good first round matchups. This was a showing that the 12 team, it really is going to work in this current format. Either you got to change the way the rankings work out, or you got to lessen the teams or something, because the way these first round matchups worked out, I can guarantee you the ratings are not going to be remotely good. There's just no way you can tell me that people tuned in for the entirety of Penn State SMU after Kevin Jennings, the quarterback for SMU, decided he was throwing to Penn State instead of his own receivers.
My God. Terrible. Then go to eight teams and play. Yeah. One plays eight at their home field, two plays seven. It's not hard. It's a simple bracket. Go download a bracket app on your iPhone and tell it, put the teams in, see them how you want them, and let it do it itself, because y'all are making this way too complicated. The committee and ESPN and the NCAA are making this way too complicated for their own good. And it's just, it's messing up their sport.
And Nathan, our co-host, had a good idea over the weekend after watching the games and the atmospheres. He said that really all the games up until the championship should be played at the home team stadium, the highest seeded team stadium. I think that's a great idea. The only problem you might have with that is the bowl games. The reason they were able to do this is because the bowl games agreed to it. So NCAA would have to get through that hurdle. But I think the atmospheres we saw, even though the games were blowouts, were awesome. I would love to see a playoff game at Bryant-Denny or Jordan-Hare or an Ole Miss. I mean, you can't tell me those atmospheres would not be rocking. That would be awesome for sure. College football. But the thing you have to get over is the bowl games. Can you move around them, figure something out? That's going to be the big issue. And the other thing is people were mentioning over the weekend when SEC fans were like, ha ha, look at the SEC. They should have put us in over SMU and Indiana and all that. They were talking about how the SEC was really emphasizing strength of schedule and the top 25 wins. Well, if you're not a fan of the top 25 wins thing, there was someone that over the weekend made a comment about maybe moving into a quad system, kind of like the NCAA college basketball has, where you have four quadrants based on where the game is played and the ranking of that opponent. And that would be a good thing to have, is we're not focusing on top 25 wins. We're focusing on quad wins. And I think you would agree with me, Gray, that the quad wins in college basketball are a lot more meaningful than what we see top 25 wins in college football.
100%.
You really can 100% tell a true team with what they have in the quad win. So I think that'd be a good thing moving forward when it comes to not focusing on strength of schedule or the top 25 wins, but focusing on what's your quad one record? What's your quad two record? Did you lose to a quad four team? Well, if you lose to a quad four team, you're automatically out of the running. If you're 10-2 or 9-3, you're automatically out. So I think going forward, that might be a system to look at to help the committee make informed decisions on getting the teams that are the best into the college football playoff. Not the most deserving, the best. Because as we saw, putting the most deserving teams in this year did not work out. Made some unwatchable football games. So I think going forward, you have to put the best 12 teams in the playoff and seed them correctly. There's no reason Penn State or Boise State and Arizona State should have a first-round bye when Texas and Ohio State and all those teams had to play a first-round matchup. So moving on from college football here, Gray, let's talk about the Auburn Tigers and their basketball team. Nathan and I kind of talked about the SEC, Alabama, and Auburn last week, but you weren't here to give us your take on what the Auburn Tigers have done this season, Gray. 12-1, have a lot of quad one wins. How impressive has Auburn been thus far for you, Gray?
My goodness, if you would have told me that we would have gotten to Christmas break and Auburn would be 12-1 and their only loss would be a 6-point loss at Cameron Indoor. They have two top five wins. I think I would have slapped you because no way. I mean, this Auburn team is good. I knew this Auburn team had a chance to be really good coming into the season with the type of top end talent that they had, the type of senior leaders that they had, the guys that they brought in, like Miles Kelly, like Todd Pettiford, Ja'Kai Howard, and those guys. And then the guys that they retained from last year, not talking about just Jani Broom, but Cardwell coming back, Chaney Johnson coming back, Denver Jones, Chad Baker-Mazzara, those guys. I knew this Auburn team had a chance to be really special, but not like this. not like this. This is just absurd. Right now, Auburn is 11-1 with a top 10 strength of schedule. They're 6-1 in those quad one games, just like we were talking about, Alex. All seven of those quad one games have been away from home. So all that jokes about a few years ago about Auburn not being able to win away from Neville Arena, that's not happening. They're winning those games now. The scoring margin in those quad one games is plus 84. In those seven quad one games, they're plus 84. And they're plus 192 in the non-quad one games. They're killing people. Just like I mentioned, the two wins versus the AP top five opponents, the top five scoring margin nationally, a 131.2 offensive rating, offensive efficiency rating in KenPom. And Alex, you if you know me about in basketball, I love talking about KenPom because KenPom relates how efficient you are on each side of the floor. I love KenPom, love how they rate both offense and defense and relate that to how good a basketball team is. Auburn's 131.2 offensive rating is the highest ever in KenPom history. Highest ever. And Auburn sits number one in KenPom, by the way, with a plus 36.4 net efficiency rating, combining the offensive and defensive ratings, is the highest ever to this point in the season in the KenPom era. What Auburn's doing is not just good. It's historic. And it's absurd. It's absurd to watch. They're killing people. They suffocate you. You know, listening to Dan Shulman and Jay Billis call Auburn's game against Purdue at Legacy Arena a few days ago, they said it best. What we were witnessing the last 2 years UConn do to teams is just suffocate you and score. Suffocate you and score. Suffocate your best player and score. That's exactly what Auburn's been doing this year. And to a top 10 strength of schedule. The only outlier is that Duke game. And I promise you, if Auburn and Duke played on a neutral floor right now, Auburn would be favored by at least 7 or 8 points. And I would be picking Auburn. No question. But it looks completely different. And it all starts right, man, with the man in the middle. My goodness. Jani Brown, I said on this podcast a couple weeks ago, I said on my Auburn basketball podcast, the Jungle Pod, I will continue to say, in 2010, it wasn't until about November that I was completely aware that the type of special talent Auburn had in a guy like Cam Newton. And it was too late by then. You know, we had the Iron Bowl, the SEC Championship, and the National Championship. And that was really the only times where I got to sit back and go, holy crap, this guy is just, he's the best in the world right now at what he does at the college game. I'm not waiting that long with Jani Brown. I am not waiting until March until I realized that with Jani Brown. He is special. There's nothing that he can't do on the floor. What he's added to his game this past offseason with the outside game, getting stronger on the interior, his defensive rebounding has improved, his free throw shooting has improved. He's a complete player. And then you surround him with guys like a Chad Baker Mazar who just does everything out there, including trash talking other coaches and opponents and fans in the stands. And the type of point guard that Denver Jones has become, a five-star freshman to Todd Pettiford who's playing lights out, a knockdown shooter like Miles Kelly, who's also a senior. And they're all seniors. And a guy like Dylan Carwell and Chaney Johnson and guys to pair down low with Jani Brown. This Auburn team's special, man. And obviously there's a long way to go, and it's just going to get harder for Auburn. Auburn has 11 has a stretch in the SEC schedule that they have 11 straight quad one games. So it is not going to get any easier for the Tigers. And I do expect them to lose games. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. And I do expect them to get exposed in areas that they need to be exposed in. But as of right now, this is the best team in the country. It's one of the better teams of this decade so far because of what they do to both ends of the floor. They suffocate you. They don't allow you to get open looks. they you know, that little fake press that they do every time, it's just suffocating to opposing guards. What they did to one of the best point guards in America, Braden Smith, the Purdue guard, Purdue senior guard, this past Saturday was absurd. He went 3 of 12 and had like 2 assists. Guy was averaging 8.5 assists a game and like less than a turnover. And he had like 4 turnovers and 2 assists and went 3 of 12. And you credit guys like Denver Jones and Miles Kelly and Baker Mazar and Tahj Pettiford for that. But it's just a suffocating defense. And if this Auburn team continues to stay healthy, I know we had the injury scare with Jani Broome in the Georgia State game, and he looks back and you continue to get healthier as he moves forward over the break. They get the Monmouth game and right before New Year's and then start of the SEC schedule. But then if they continue to stay healthy, they continue to play as hard as they're playing in those quad one games that we've seen all year, there's nothing that this team can accomplish. And again, it's going to get hard because the SEC is a gauntlet. They got some really good teams in the SEC. But it's special. It's really special so far.
This Auburn team is really scary. I don't want to play them. I don't think anybody in the country wants to play them. Jani Broome is the best player in the country. I would not be surprised if we're sitting here in May and he's a top 5 draft pick, the way his game has grown and being able to shoot the 3-ball the way he does as a 7-footer. I mean, comparing himself to the Morehead State days to now at Auburn.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a completely different player. Completely. You can't use the Morehead State tape anymore to scout Jani Broome. You have to use this year and really the end of last year. Dude is awesome. The players that Bruce Pearl brought in to build around him have been absolutely outstanding. Tahj Pettiford has been the freshman guard that Bruce Pearl has wanted for the past 3 or 4 years. I mean, finally he gets one that works out. So Auburn really, really good. They're in a good position going into SEC play, but like you said, Gray, a lot of difficult games in that conference. There's not an easy out anymore. I mean, the easiest game you might have is an LSU or South Carolina, but even those teams are going to be difficult to play. I can't wait for SEC basketball to start. It's going to be really, really good basketball. Any given Saturday, Monday, whatever day possible they play, any team can win. And that's what sports should be all about. It shouldn't be guaranteed wins, as we've seen a couple of years past with some certain teams in the SEC. But, Greg, why won't the AP poll rank Auburn number one? Why won't they? What's wrong with the AP poll?
Look, Auburn is ranked number one in KenPom, Evan Maya, Torek, ESPN Basketball Power Index, CBS, Fox, and every single computer metric that you look at that uses whatever metric you want to use. Auburn is number one and by far number one. But the AP poll has a bunch of guys that don't really watch all the games and don't watch these top teams, and all they look at is the one in the loss column compared to the zero in the loss column to Tennessee, and they're like, Tennessee's number one. Tennessee got to be number one for sure. Hey, guys, if the AP poll means anything, all it means to this Auburn team is more fuel to the fire. And if you want to keep adding fuel to this Auburn team with the type of moxie that this Auburn team has got with the guys like Jad Baker-Mazzara and Jani Broome and Tahj Pettiford and those guys and Dylan Cardwell, keep doing it. Please keep doing it. I hope Auburn stays at number two for the rest of the year. For the rest of the year. Or at least until January 25th, until that Tennessee team comes to Neville Arena. Because that would be quite the game if you brought in number one Tennessee to Neville Arena and both these teams to just keep winning. And like, Tennessee's a really good basketball team, and it's part of the SEC that's just a dominant force right now. But Tennessee needed a late full court, or not full court, a late coast-to-coast drive layup, tough layup to beat Illinois. The Illinois team would beat Ohio State. They're not beating Purdue. but Auburn is 7-6-1 in quad one game. They have six quad one wins. Tennessee has three. Auburn has two wins over the top five. Tennessee has not played a top five team. So I get to the point where I talk about I'm talking about strength of schedule, which reminds me a lot of football. And I'm getting to talking about the quad one wins. And of course, I don't care about the AP poll. The polls I'm looking at are the metrics, the efficiency ratings, the luck ratings, the strength of record, where Auburn it sits in terms of what the lines are going to be moving forward in games, not just in the near future, but you know, looking ahead to some fun SEC games that they're going to have. You know, they're going to have to go to two Rupp. Obviously, they're going to have to go to two Coleman Coliseum. They're going to go to Arkansas. They're going to go to A&M. They get Florida at home. They get Tennessee at home. They get Alabama at home. There's some fun SEC games. The AP poll means less than nothing right now. And it always will, because it's just a bunch of goobers who don't watch the games and they cover their team, which they're doing their job, that vote on it. And if you look, the only polls that don't have Auburn number one are based on people, are based on humans. Because all the computers, all the metrics, all the power indexes, all every efficiency rating has Auburn at one. But the people have them at two. It just shows that it doesn't matter. But I just once again, I do hope that they remain Auburn at number two. The first place votes did get a little closer this week, which scared me. I don't want that to be any. I want Tennessee to remain number one until January 25th.
There's always going to be inherent bias when it comes to using people to make rankings, polls, or whatever. There's always going to be bias. We see it in the college football playoff. We see it in the AP poll with college basketball. Always bias. And I proposed it to Nathan last week. I'll propose it to you this week, Gray. Is instead of using the AP poll to rank the top 25 teams, is you take a composite of all the things you were talking about, all the metrics you were talking about, put them in a composite ranking, and there's your top 25 teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
I guess where Auburn would be.
Number one. I think that's the perfect way to rank teams when it comes to college basketball, college football. That's the most accurate thing. And it's people, oh, I don't want to rely on computers. Well, computers are way more reliable than the people that are doing it right now. Now, granted, you had a few times where the computers messed up a little bit. Gray, Auburn got screwed one time in college football with that. But yep. The computers, yep, for the most part, have been a million times more reliable than the AP poll and the College Football Playoff Committee poll. It's been a million times more reliable.
Yeah, and if you the idea that you just proposed, talking about the average and the composite rankings of all those different metrics and efficiency and ratings and that sort of thing, that, as much more reliable it is, what it would be, but it would also be able to tell you everything. It would be able to, and we've seen, yes, the computers mess up. You mentioned the 2004 Auburn season where they would have beaten USC in the national championship. They would have beaten Oklahoma in the national championship. Okay, we had two top five picks at running back, but sure. That's where the computer messes up. That's why the college football, that's why the NCAA went away from the BCS. It's because you also saw matchups like Alabama-LSU in the 2011 national championship game, when we had already seen them before. And if that was a people vote, that probably would have been a little different. And it ended up being a blowout. So that's why they've kind of gone away from it. But if you look at the college basketball side, there's so many more metrics to look at, especially when you're talking about defensive metrics. The eye test and points allowed per game are some of the last things I want to watch when I look at defensive metrics. I want to see how each individual matchup is I want to see the importance of each individual matchup, whether it's on the perimeter or on the inside. I loved watching the matchup. Just for example, the matchup between Trey Kaufman Wren and Jani Broome and Dylan Carwell this past Saturday. That was a great matchup. But that matchup was affected because Purdue couldn't get him the ball most of the time. Because Braden Smith was in absolute a world of hurt on the perimeter due to Auburn's other guards. So that should help Purdue in knowing that we've got a big, we just struggled to get it to him because Auburn was so good defensively. So there's so many different metrics to look at, and there's metrics now in college basketball in some of those ratings that I was mentioning that Auburn was number one in that use those. That's why Auburn's number one in them. And having that and comparing that, like there's a reason the last 2 years, the number one team in KenPom most of the year was UConn. Who won the national championship those past 2 years? UConn. There's a reason that actually early in the KenPom era, that Kentucky team that had like 8 NBA All-Stars on it with Karl Anthony Towns and Devin Booker and Tyler Ulis and the Harrison brothers, and they were just incredible. And going the way undefeated through the season. And they got to the tournament. They switched to number two in KenPom because they weren't playing as efficiently as Duke was. Who wins the national championship? Duke. It's really not hard. And the fact that we continue to go with people and committees, and I know we've had this issue for the past many years in college football, but it doesn't make any sense when we have those metrics like a KenPom, like an Evan Maya, like the Power Index, like a Toric, and these metrics that use these different rating systems that are more accurate and provide a bigger story than an AP poll.
It's really not that hard. We as people just like to make everything about a million times more complicated than what it has to be. And college football, college basketball are no different. Let's make everything more complicated, put people into it that don't need to be into it, and it's just not accurate. The college football playoff's not accurate this year. That's not the 12 best teams. The AP poll has never been accurate for college basketball, it feels like, in my entire lifetime. I don't feel like they've ever gotten at least the top 10 teams right at any point in time. It's just rough. But college basketball this year has been really good. I'm excited to see what happens going into 2025 and the SEC conference play and the Big 12, the Big 10, how all this shakes out, because there's a lot of good teams that are really going to be tested come conference play in college basketball. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Hope everyone has a happy holidays. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.